Мы также уже успели донести до американских коллег информацию о встрече президента Путина с генштабом, которая прошла сегодня утром, и где президенту было доложено о том, что 5000 военнослужащих Украины окружены в районе Купянска, 5500 в районе Красноармейска, и об успешных испытаниях ракеты абсолютно нового класса «Буревестник» с ядерной установкой. И очень важно, что эта информация напрямую доносится до руководства и ключевых людей в администрации президента США.
This is my video update on this Sunday afternoon, October the 26th, coming to you from Nicosia, Cyprus. Let's talk about some news. And the big story for today is the announcement of the encirclement of over 10,000 Ukraine troops in the Pokrovsk-Mirnograd area, as well as the Kupiansk area, which is in Kharkov, the Kharkov region. And this has been confirmed by Gerasimov and by Putin. The Russian president met with Gerasimov at a command center, and they both announced the encirclement of the Ukraine troops in both Pokrovsk and Kupiansk. And from my understanding of things, I at first thought this was an operational encirclement, but it looks like this is an encirclement, and there is no way for the Ukrainian troops to get out of this situation, a catastrophic situation for the Ukraine troops. Zelensky had his chance, and Sirsky, Zelensky and Sirsky, they had their chance to allow the Ukraine troops, to order the Ukraine troops in Pokrovsk and in Kupiansk to retreat. An orderly retreat. They could have allowed this, but for various political and PR media reasons, as Zelensky and Sirsky always do, they did not order the orderly withdrawal of those troops that were being encircled in Pokrovsk, Mirnograd, and Kupiansk, and they actually doubled and tripled down in those areas. The order from Zelensky and Sirsky was to hold on to those areas as long as possible for political and PR reasons. They always do this. They did it in Bakhmut, they did it in Avdiivka, and they also did it now in Pokrovsk, Mirnograd, as well as Kupiansk. There were reports yesterday or the past couple of days that Azov forces were told to go in and try to break open the encirclement, but the Azov forces, they refused to go to the front line and to try and break open what was going to be a catastrophic encirclement in these areas. And so for Putin to meet with Gerasimov, and for both of them to publicly announce this encirclement, and for Putin to say that that the Russian military should try to create the necessary conditions to allow the Ukraine troops to lay down their arms, for all of this to happen, for these statements to be made public from Putin and Gerasimov, means that this is a done deal. this is a done deal because I was on social media and there's still a lot of coping going on from the collective West and from the Ukraine side of things, making it out as if this is not true and the Ukraine troops are not encircled and we're winning the war and all of this type of nonsense. It was about a week or two ago where a whole bunch of social media channels, pro-Ukraine social media channels, were actually saying that the Russian troops were encircled in Pokrovsk. Look for Putin to meet with Gerasimov and for them to announce this. It's done. Pokrovsk encircled. 10,000, Pokrovsk-Kupiansk encircled, 10,000 plus troops trapped. Putin saying that that they should lay down their arms. Putin said that they would have the rights of prisoners of war. This is a done thing. Big victory for Russia, for the Russian military. I imagine it's going to take a couple of weeks for everything to clear out. Hey, my friends. How you guys doing? How you doing? It's going to take a couple of weeks for everything to clear out. You got to imagine in these regions. But Pokrovsk is now captured, or will be fully captured fairly soon. So that was the one big announcement from Putin and Gerasimov. A huge announcement, an absolutely huge announcement. Of course, you're going to get the coping, which is going to say that Pokrovsk is not really an important city. It holds no strategic value. I'm waiting for the Newland Family Institute for the study of war to come out with a statement and say that Pokrovsk really doesn't hold any strategic importance. So you know that those statements are going to be coming out very soon. Pokrovsk is immensely important. All that is left now is just a couple of more cities, a couple of more towns. And that's it. Donbass is captured. The big one is going to be Slavyansk, right? But now Russia is well positioned to make their move to capture all of Donbass. And Pokrovsk was a very important logistics and supply hub for Ukraine. Now it's going to become a very important logistics and supply hub for the Russian military as they make one final push to capture all of Donetsk and all of Donbass, removing more leverage that Trump or Zelensky or the collective West thought they had, right? They thought they had some leverage in that Russia controlled only 75 or 78% of Donetsk, and they thought that they would be able to use this as some sort of leverage in a bigger deal, or at least the Trump White House thought this. The New York Times and the Washington Post reported on this, but that's going to be taken away very soon from the collective West. So that is the big news. I wonder if Keith Kellogg or Rubio or Lindsey Graham have told Trump what is happening on the front lines. I wonder if they've notified Trump of this catastrophe. So anyway, that was the one big announcement that Putin and Gerasimov made. And there's a second big announcement that they made, and that is the introduction of a new weapon known as the Burevestnik. Burevestnik. That is the new weapon that Gerasimov and Putin announced. The Burevestnik. The new Burevestnik, or the Storm Bringer. The Storm Messenger, I think, is a better translation. The Storm Bringer or the Storm Messenger. The Burevestnik is a cruise missile using a nuclear motor and has unlimited flight time and range. The chief of the general staff of the Russian army, Gerasimov, said the missile is capable of overcoming any missile defense system through maneuvers. The Burevestnik missile was in the air for about 15 hours, covering 14,000 kilometers. And I believe it is nuclear capable, if I'm not mistaken, but unlimited flight time. Am I reading that correctly? The missile is capable of overcoming any missile defense system, and it was in the air for 15 hours, covering 14,000 kilometers. Unlimited range and months of continuous flight. 14 hours flying around. Can you imagine? Sounds like a pretty incredible weapon. Burevestnik. They have the Oreshnik, now they have the Burevestnik. 14,000 kilometers. That's anywhere in the world, pretty much, right? Hey, you're getting some rest, huh? Have a good sleep, my friend. So yeah, 14,000 kilometers, it could just like fly around, huh? Fly around, it can evade any defense system. I wonder if Kellogg, Rubio, Lindsey Graham are telling Trump about this. Man, oh man. Trump should have made a deal. June 2024, root causes. He should have taken that deal instead of declaring a sanctions war against Russia and a possible long-range missile Tomahawk escalation with Russia. I'll see your Tomahawk missile, your 30-year-old slow Tomahawk missile with the Burevestnik, right? I'll see that missile and I'll up it with a Burevestnik and a couple of hundred or a couple of thousand Oreshniks. What did Rutte say yesterday in my video update? I talked about it. What was Rutte's announcement to the coalition of the willing? That Putin is out of money, troops, and ideas. Here's an idea for you, Mark Rutte. Here's an idea. Unlimited range and unlimited flight time, right? Is that what we're talking about? How's that for an idea? Anyway, all right, we'll learn more about the Burevestnik with time. I hope I got the specs right. Gerasimov did say 15 hours in the air and it covered 14,000 kilometers. That's amazing. So the Russian military, they've been knocking out the energy infrastructure of Ukraine. The Ukraine military, they've been knocking out military facilities, the energy infrastructure. They're even going after wind turbines. We're starting to get images of Russian drones hitting wind turbines and knocking those out as well. There's some images from turbines in Kramatorsk. Turbines on fire, hit by BM-35 drones. It's going to be a very difficult winter in Kiev. So you have encirclements, you have the Russian military continuing to knock out military facilities and energy infrastructure. And you have the coalition of the willing playing make-believe we can win this conflict in London, right? So let's talk about Trump and his trip to Malaysia, where he signed the ceasefire agreement. He was part of the ceasefire agreement signing ceremony between Cambodia and Thailand. Or was it Cambodia and Albania? Or was it Cambodia and Azerbaijan? I'm not sure. So many wars that Trump has stopped. There's so many wars. I just lose count, man. I really lose count. Anyway, which one was it? Was it was Cambodia, Thailand, right? Yeah, it was Cambodia, Thailand. He knows. He knows. Anyway, yeah, it was the signing ceremony of Cambodia, Thailand, and Trump was at this event because he helped broker this peace deal. And he also signed some trade agreements as well with Cambodia and with Thailand. He did that also. And this was at the ASEAN summit in Malaysia. And then Trump, he said in his statement that he really likes resolving conflicts. He likes stopping wars. He said, "I really like it. I like it. I really like it. I like it." I shouldn't say it's a hobby because it's much more serious than a hobby, but it's something I'm good at and I love to do. He also said that the UN should do it, but it doesn't. Yeah, the UN should do it, but it doesn't.
I won't forget that day because it was one of the first wars that I got involved in, and I love doing it. I love it's one. It's like I shouldn't say it's a hobby because it's so much more serious than a hobby, but it's something that I'm good at, and it's something I love to do. The United Nations should be doing this, but they don't do it.
Well, at least you're doing it, Trump. At least you're stopping all of these conflicts. You're resolving all of these conflicts. Eight conflicts, and Project Ukraine is going to be number nine. The two eagles. Project Ukraine will be number nine. That's right. So yeah, it's more than a hobby, according to Trump. It's much more than a hobby. And he likes it. I like it. I like solving conflicts. It's more than a hobby. I like it a lot. You know, Trump said that, and there's an audio recording, an audio interview, or an audio statement that Trump made. And he said that he will not be meeting with Putin until Putin is ready to accept a ceasefire. In other words, until Putin is ready to capitulate. Once Putin is ready to capitulate, then Trump is ready to meet with Putin. Trump says he won't meet Putin again unless a deal is confirmed and that he thought Russia-Ukraine peace deal would have been done already. There's a lot of hatred between the two, between Zelensky and Putin. There's tremendous hatred. I like it. I don't like it. I don't like it. There's a lot of hatred between Zelensky and Putin. I don't like it. They don't like each other. Anyway, yeah, so he's not going to meet with Putin until something's more definite, right? He means capitulation. That's what he means. Ceasefire. They call it a ceasefire until Putin's ready to agree on a ceasefire. Then for Trump, there's no need to meet with the Russian president. And he's been advised of this by Kellogg and by Rubio. We all know it's Rubio now, according to Bloomberg. According to Bloomberg, it's Rubio that told Trump, "Don't meet with Putin in Budapest. Just wait a little longer. We've got Russia right where we want them. We got them right where we want them. Their economy is collapsing. Their military is collapsing. They got no more money, according to Mark Rutte. And Putin's out of ideas, President Trump. I spoke to Mark Rutte, and he said that Putin is out of ideas. So just delay the Budapest summit a little longer." Delay it for a little bit longer, and you'll get a ceasefire. That was the advice that Rubio gave him 24 hours later, Putin meets Gerasimov, Pokrovsk, Mirnograd, Kupiansk, encircled. New weapon announced. Budapestnik. Yeah, maybe you should have gone to that Budapest summit, US President Trump. It's not too late. Trump could post on Truth Social tomorrow once he finds out all this information, if he finds out all this information that is coming out of the front lines. Maybe he can post on Truth Social how disappointed he is with Zelensky. I don't know. Maybe he can do that. Try to wiggle his way out of the mess that he's in, out of the big giant L, the big defeat that he's going to get in Ukraine. Maybe he can wiggle his way out of it and start blaming Zelensky or the Europeans or something like that. Just put a post on Truth Social and say, I'm disappointed with Zelensky. I'm disappointed with the Europeans. This was never my war. This was Biden's war. What do you say, Putin? Let's meet up in Budapest. I spoke to Orban and he's ready to set it up. You know, the encirclement of Pokrovsk, these 10,000 Ukraine soldiers, Pokrovsk, Kupiansk, and Trump putting all of this sanctions pressure on Russia to try to get them to agree to a ceasefire, to a freeze. Reminds me of Merkel and Debaltseve, doesn't it? Same situation in Debaltseve. Ukraine forces surrounded. And Merkel flies to Moscow and gets Putin to agree to a freeze and the Minsk deals. You have the same situation pretty much. Instead of Merkel, it's Trump. And instead of Trump flying to Moscow, he decided to try and put sanctions pressure, and not only on Russia, but on India and China, hoping that that there would not be this catastrophic situation in Pokrovsk. But the encirclement happened quickly, huh? Happened quickly. I wasn't thinking that it was going to be announced. I wasn't expecting for it to be announced today. I was thinking maybe in a couple of weeks or something like that. Definitely after Trump's trip to Malaysia and to South Korea after his meeting with Xi Jinping, I was thinking that after all of that, then maybe you would get eventually the announcement of a complete encirclement in Pokrovsk. But it happened before Trump's going to meet with Xi Jinping. Think about that. Trump said in a statement that he's going to be meeting with Xi right before the APEC summit in South Korea, and they're going to solve their trade dispute. He said that. He also said that that China's going to have to make concessions. He also said that the United States is going to have to make concessions. Huh? How about that? He said that the U.S. will have to make concessions to China. But he said that he was going to tell Xi in China to put pressure on Russia to stop buying Russian oil and to put pressure on Russia to ditch Russia. It's basically what he was looking to do, to get China, to break China off from Russia, like he's trying to break India off from Russia. And that's what he was hoping to do over the next couple of days. But now he's going to be meeting with China, with Xi Jinping, and Xi's going to have this big Russian victory in his back pocket, right? As Trump is going to tell Xi Jinping, you need to ditch Russia. Xi's going to say, why would I ditch our partners who are winning, right? And why would I ditch them now that they've got this big victory? So yeah, this came at a really bad time for the U.S. president. Yeah, he can't go to Xi Jinping and say ditch Russia. They're not making any progress anyway. They're losing the conflict. He can't say that now to China, can he? They're losing the conflict. Putin's not doing well. They're not making any gains. It's a stalemate. He can't really go with that as he meets with Xi Jinping, can he? So anyway, let's Let's shift gears and let's talk about Germany. Lots going on with Germany, huh? Bloomberg, they put out an article saying that German firms are handing over all kinds of information, very, very sensitive information about their supply chain, their logistics, product information. They're handing it over to China because these are the requirements that China has put in place in order to green light the export of rare earths. And the German firms they're having to submit all of this documentation, which includes all of this this very, very sensitive information about how German companies are operating. And they hand it over to Russia, and then to China, and then China takes a look at all of this information, and they determine if they qualify to get some of those Chinese rare earths, and they make sure that these German companies are not involved in any military production. And the German government is very worried about this, and they're very dependent on the China rare earths. The Bloomberg article has the title, German Firms Hand Over Secrets That China Could Use For Leverage. Companies are typically loath to reveal such private information, but German firms don't have much choice. 95% of their rare earth minerals come from China, far surpassing any other EU country, according to Merricks, China's Ministry of Commerce has argued the rules help better defend world peace, citing the minerals' use in the military field. Ultimately, there are fears Beijing will not just disrupt Germany's economy, but the entire European supply chain, a troubling prospect for the continent's massive rearmament plans as Russia saber-rattles. With all the information they are in the process of collecting, the Chinese authorities are likely also getting a picture of defense industrial bases in NATO countries and how intertwined they are with each other. So makes sense, huh? It makes sense. You hand over all the information about your business, its supply chains, its logistics, and everything to China, and China gets a really good picture of what's going on. And some of this stuff is connected or could be connected to the bigger picture, to the bigger NATO picture, right? And that's something that China does not want. They don't want their rare earths going to NATO and to the collective West military for collective West military use. Checkmate China, man. Checkmate. 95% dependent on China rare earths, that is Germany. And the collective West tried to seize Nexperia and tried to take over their chips manufacturing, forgetting that the facility was located in China, and now they have export controls on Nexperia chips, which are needed in the automotive industry, something that is very important for Germany. Good job, BlackRock Mertz. Oh, and the foreign minister. And the foreign minister was planning a trip to China, and there was no one that wanted to meet with him. And what a disaster. What a disaster for Germany, man. Anyway, all right, so that is what is going on with Germany. Draghi, the Goldman Sachs one-time ECB head, Super Mario Draghi, he was giving a speech yesterday, and he is now pushing European federalism. He's calling it pragmatic federalism. United States of Europe is what Draghi is pushing for, which is something that the globalists have wanted for a long time, a United States of Europe. So that is what Draghi is calling for. All part of the plan, part of the globalist plan. Ursula van der Pirate. She was giving a speech yesterday, and she said that the European Union is going to break free from its reliance on China's critical minerals. That is what Ursula said. And in order to break free from China's critical minerals, she is going to create a fund. Of course she's going to create a fund. And the fund, what is going on here? And the fund that Ursula is going to put together is going to be similar to the military fund that she put together, and the energy fund. It's going to be very similar to the energy fund that she put together, which had a goal of moving away from dependence on Russian gas and energy. And now she's going to do the same thing when it comes to Chinese minerals. So she is going to start to phase out EU dependence on Chinese minerals. Man, they are destroying Europe. She even has a name for this fund, for this plan. It's called the Resource EU Plan. To break the EU's over-reliance on China for critical minerals, imports, and refining, the Commission will put forward a Resource EU plan, van der Leyen said. She did not provide much detail about the plan, not when it would be presented, but she said it would follow a similar model as the Repower EU plan that the Commission introduced in 2022 to phase out Russian fossil fuels after Moscow's illegal invasion of Ukraine. And how did that Repower EU plan go for Europe? How did that go for the EU phasing out Russian energy? Oh boy. Anyway, that's Ursula. And before we get to our clown world, we have one more big story, which is that we had presidential elections in Ireland, and we had a big win, a decisive win, from the independent candidate, Catherine Connolly. Catherine Connolly. Independent, but I believe she was, she's on the left, and she was supported by Sinn Féin and other parties on the left. And she's very much against military buildup in Europe. Military buildup for NATO, even though Ireland is not in NATO. She's against militarization, from what I understand, in general. Pro-Palestine. And she's been critical of Russia, right? Russia and Ukraine. She's been on criticized Russia, but she's not pro-Ukraine. She's not pro-war and escalation either. So I don't know. I don't know much about Connolly. People watching in Ireland, let us know your opinion down below. If this is a good choice, or if this is a bad choice, or neither, or more of the same. It does sound like you're talking about someone who is very much anti-war. At least that's what it sounds like from what I've read about her. So that's Ireland, the presidential elections. The president in Ireland doesn't actually have that much, from what I understand, not that much power. But still an important important result that took place in Ireland, a vote against war and escalation. At least that's how some analysts are looking at it. So let's do a clown world and we can wrap up this video. We're also getting reports that German companies are warning Germany against seizing Russian assets. We're getting those reports as well, because Russia holds something like 100 billion in German company assets in banks in Russia. And the German companies are afraid that if the Russian assets are seized, then what Russia is going to do is just take the 100 billion of German companies' assets that are currently being held in Russia, and they're just going to take that money. And Germany's going to end up losing more money than, I just did a circle, Germany's going to end up losing more money than what they're going to be gaining by seizing the Russian frozen assets. So Germany companies are warning Merz, don't go through with it, because we have a lot of money that is locked up in Russia and in Russian banks. And so that's also some news that we're getting. Okay, so now we can do a clown world. Do I have to talk about Brigitte Macron? Do I have to talk about what's going on there? Oh my God. Let's see here. There was some reporter, TV, a journalist for BFM TV channel, who cited a representative of the First Lady of France, Tristan Bromet. And the claim is that Brigitte discovered that on the French tax website, her gender is listed as male and the name is recorded as Jean-Michel. The First Lady has already filed a complaint. Okay, so that's what this reporter said, citing a representative or a former representative for the Macrons. And according to Brigitte, there's some mistake on her tax records, and she has already filed a complaint. I won't take it any further. I will leave it there. Anyway, all right. So that's what's going on with that one. I imagine Candace is happy about that revelation. And one more clown world. Kamala Harris is hinting that she's going to run again for president. She gave an interview to the BBC, and she said, well, she was asked whether she could be the first woman president. She was asked, do you think we're going to see a woman in charge of the White House in our lifetime? And then the reporter asked, could that be you? Kamala Harris said, yes, we are going to see a woman president or a woman in the White House in our lifetime. And the BBC reporter asked, could that be you? And Kamala replied, possibly, adding that she has not made a decision on whether to run in 2028. I'm not done. I have lived my entire career a life of service, and it's in my bones. And there are many ways to serve. I have not decided yet what I will do in the future beyond what I'm doing right now. What is she doing right now? I don't even know what she's doing right now. Anyway, that's what she said to the BBC. Harris was also pressed on her political odds in the White House race after bookmakers placed her behind celebrity figures such as actor and former pro wrestler Dwayne The Rock Johnson. She's polling behind The Rock. Is The Rock even popular anymore? I'm not even sure how popular The Rock is, to be quite honest. Anyway, all right. Not much of a clown world for this Sunday. I forgot to say like the video and subscribe to the channel again. I always forget. Anyway, like this video, subscribe to this channel, and we're on Substack, we're on Locals, we're on Telegram and Rumble and X. So I will see everyone tomorrow. Take care.